Welcome back to the Gigi Meyer podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Gigi Meyer, and I'm so pumped to welcome a super special guest today on the podcast with me, John Madsen. It's about time that you've joined me on a podcast. Welcome to the Gigi Meyer podcast.
I'm excited to be here. Super excited. So thanks for having me.
I felt like I needed to take a nap before this because I don't know. I feel like I needed my brain at full capacity for this conversation. I feel like I'm ready for my mind to get blown.
Let's do it.
Okay, cool, everyone. So just a little background of how I know John. John played football for my dad at University of Utah when, I don't know how this is going to make you feel, John, but I was 10 years old at the time. And so we go way back, right? I'm 28 now. We go way back. And so I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about your story because it's actually insane, right? You played for my dad in college, right? And then you went on to play in the NFL for how many years?
3 years.
3 years without playing a second in high school.
Right.
That's pretty insane. And so, I have a quick disclaimer. And I wanted to say this early on. I'm not going to tell you to watch your mouth because I feel like you have passion in your words. And I don't want to tell you not to, you know, cuss because I feel like that makes you who you are, and it would mess with your flow. So I'm not going to tell you, but I'm going to give a quick little disclaimer to our listeners that John is very fond of the F word. So be prepared.
So I'll tell you this, like, I know who I'm speaking to. So on my own podcast, it's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be really raw. If I'm on your podcast, I can temper language any way I want.
We'll see. Because when you get in flow. Okay. But anyways, back to that. Yeah, I appreciate it. But so back to the point, right? You played college football, NFL football without playing a second in high school. Like how did you even make that happen?
Yeah. So, you know, this is a cool podcast for me because I knew of Gigi Meyer when you were 10, because all the local media was, you know, they were in love with your dad. Your dad has a way of like dazzling the media in a way that is really special, because that's part of being a head coach. So anyways, you were his daughter and you were playing sports against boys, and the media was like, Urban Meyer's daughter Gigi is out there playing baseball against boys and beating the crap out of them. So I knew you existed back then because of that. So that's awesome. And then your dad has had major, major, major impact on my life. And we can get into that in a second, but long story short, like you, I was an athlete from the time I could ever remember, right? Like you, in a bigger sense, were going to football games in huge stadiums. I was always at the ballpark with my parents, and that was what I loved to do. So I'm going to talk a lot about desire on this podcast, but I had that desire that was burning from the earliest of memories, right? And I don't know if that was implanted in me or it was just because that was what my family did. If you were to ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, from 5 years old to all the way through high school, I would have looked you dead in the eyes and said professional athlete. So like that was my North Star. So going into high school as a freshman, one of the first things that we had to do was try to be on the football team is we had to go to the weight room and we had to do the summer conditioning program. Up to that point, I was playing Little League, I was playing baseball, I was playing tennis, playing basketball. And I thought that I was a pretty good athlete. But I walked into that weight room in high school going into my sophomore year. And I got completely embarrassed in the weight room. I was looking around and there was seniors. There were a bunch of big kids, way stronger than me. And I remember taking the bench press bar off the rack and getting squashed by 95 pounds. And all my friends, like high school kids were laughing because they all could do it. And in a moment, I was like, oh my God, like, I'm not strong, like I'm scrawny. Like I had this moment of like looking at myself differently for the first time. And I went home and I was like, Dad, I don't think I'm gonna play football anymore. And growing up, like we had won state championships in Little League and I was always a very key player, but I grew really tall and then I was super skinny and super awkward in this weird little stage. And so he's like, well, what's going on? I'm like, you know, I went to this weight room and I'm like, all my friends are stronger than me. Like, I'm going to get killed out there. I'm too small. And I'm like, but I want to get stronger. So can you, you know, help me out with lifting weights and whatever? And so I fell in love with this idea that I could work on my body and get stronger clear back when I was 16 years old. Long story short, he hooked me up with this personal trainer. This trainer just beat the crap out of me for literally a year straight. I went I probably put on 25 pounds of pretty solid muscle and got more athletic. And I still had the intention of playing high school football like the next year. But then I was like doing really good in basketball and I was a good baseball player. And I just never, I never once stepped foot on the high school football field despite wanting to, because I was like, well, I'm going to go pro, but it's probably going to be in basketball or baseball. So I didn't ever play. And ironically, going into high school graduation, I had zero scholarship opportunities. So I stood there like all the other kids. My basketball team was 1-39 for the 2 years that I started. So we were terrible. My baseball team wasn't very much better than that. And so I'm standing at graduation knowing in my heart that I'm not done being an athlete. Everybody's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to go to this junior college because it's the only college that I applied to, 2 hours away from Salt Lake City. And I'm going to try out for football, basketball, and baseball because I'm going to make one of them. And that was my intention. Football came first. And when I got out to the tryouts, the coaches, I was a good athlete, right? 6'4", 225 pounds. And the coaches are like, look, John, if you focus all your attention on this, there's no telling how long you can play. And I just went all in on football, learned how to play.
Mm. Wow. So you went to the junior college for a couple of years and then you transferred over to Utah?
Yeah. So I went to that junior college 2 hours outside of Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. I redshirted my first year because I literally, you probably at that point knew more about football than I did. And that's, you know, you probably know a lot about football, but I didn't know what a cover two was. I didn't know what a cover three was. I had no idea. All I did at tryouts, this is how I made the team. I was like, look, I can run and I can jump and I'm a really good athlete. So I'd go to the one-on-ones and I'd tell a quarterback, he's like, what route do you want to run? I'm like, just throw it far and deep and I'll go get it. And so like, I literally was just running by people, jumping up and making these catches. And these coaches are like, someone's got to teach this kid how to play football. And so I had no idea. I redshirted that first year, my redshirt freshman year. I wasn't a star, but I was getting noticed. And so I started to get letters and recruited really heavily because again, I was 6'5", almost 225 pounds, very athletic. And I had enough film to where a lot of coaches were taking notice. So I'm on the phone with different coaches and they were like, look, you have one more year left, go dominate that year. And then we're going to take you as the JUCO transfer. And literally tons of colleges. There was a newspaper article that came out that had your dad on the front of it. And it was like, we have a really good team except at wide receiver. So I don't know how good we're going to be unless we find some way to get some talent in this position group. And so he was calling out the position group. And my dad's like, hey, there's this new coach coming to town. He says there's no wide receivers. You should go talk to him. And I was like, okay, that, you know, that makes sense. So I drive and I go up to the University of Utah's football's office. There was no appointment, no invitation. I have a film that's half basketball, half football from my previous season. And I go up there and I'm like, I just want to talk to a football coach about possibly transferring. I go to Snow College and I have a year to play. And there was a GA at the time and he pokes his head in the room and he's like, just a second. He says, I have a 6'5" wide receiver out here that wants to talk to, you know, one of you coaches. And out comes your dad and the wide receiver coach at the time. And they like put me in one of the offices and I was wearing a hat just like this. And your dad's like, take your hat off. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So I'm like scared. Like your dad has, maybe not on you, but everybody else in the world, super intimidating. So he's just like, what's your story? And I'm like, oh, I play at Snow Junior College. I want to transfer. All these other coaches are recruiting me. They want me to play another year. P.S. I didn't play high school football and I want a shot. And he's just like, what? So he watches the film, see some stuff that's, you know, got some potential, and then ends up inviting me to be a walk-on that year and foregoing the last year of my junior college. So I shook his hand and said, I'll play for the University of Utah. So I got out to my car and I'm super pumped, like just so excited. This was the school that I always wanted to go to. And so I call my dad. I'm like, Dad, I just talked to Coach Meyer. He invited me out. I'm enrolled in classes. And my dad's like, that's awesome. Did he give you a scholarship? And I said, I don't know. And he's like, what do you mean you don't know? And I said, I just shook his hand because he asked if I wanted to be a member of the team. And I said, yes. And who knows, right? And so my dad's like, well, you got to ask, how are we going to pay for school? And I'm like, okay, I'll ask. And every day for the next 2 weeks, my dad was telling me to go ask, but I didn't want to knock on that door, right? Because I kind of knew the answer, but I didn't. So I knock on the door, your dad's office one day, and he's just looking at me like, what do you want? Right. And so I said, Coach, I was just wondering, because my dad is wondering, do I have a scholarship, or, you know, what's the deal? He's like, look, you've barely played football in your life. I'm giving you a shot here. I'll make you a promise. If you play for me, you'll never pay for school. If you don't, then you're paying for this first semester, because I don't know if you can play or not play. I'm just giving you an opportunity. I'm like, cool, good enough. Walked out, told my dad, I'm like, no scholarship, but I'm going to earn one, and we'll figure it out from there. So that was how I entered into your dad's world.
Wow. That's a really cool story. So then I think one of the coolest stories I've heard you talk about was, you know, you were playing for him, and I think you got to a point where you felt like stagnant, or you lost your passion, and then you went to go, and I'll let you tell the story, but you were considering quitting.
Oh, I quit in my mind. In my mind, I had quit. So this all took place, mind you, after spring ball. So usually for football fans, it's like spring ball, team kind of knows who its players are. Then it's summer conditioning. I entered summer conditioning. They weren't expecting me to play very much at all, probably that year. And then there was training camp. So I go into training camp, and the very first practice, I'm out there running routes, and your dad is like, watches me run a route one-on-one, and he looks at the wide receiver coach and he goes, get him ready to play this year. He's going to play this year. And it's like, that's all he needed to see. And I'm like, yes, I told you I could play, right? Like I had that belief. However, I had a phenomenal first week of practice. I don't know if you've been around training camp with your dad, but back in the day, there was for the Utah decals on the helmet, you had to earn them. So if you were new or a recruit, you didn't have the decals on the helmet. You had a piece of tape across the front of your helmet that had your last name, because in order to be initiated to the team, you had to earn your right to be there. Just being there wasn't enough. And so that was said. And I'm like, I'm going to be the first person that gets that tag off my helmet and the decals on. First day of practice, initiate, John Madsen, come up to the front. You've earned your right to be on this team. So I'm like, yes. Right. So I have a phenomenal first week, just blowing people's minds. Next, though, all of a sudden the fatigue started to kick in. Like now I was getting like tired. It was two-a-days. Your dad coaches hard. Because I went from zero expectation, it was all fun and games, to now all of a sudden get him ready to play in like 2 weeks, by the way, he doesn't know the playbook. And so I'm lining up on the wrong side of the formation. Now coaches are yelling at me because they're expecting something, right? When you have zero expectation, it's somewhat in your benefit. You can play very well, right? Now, all of a sudden the expectation got thrown on me and I started messing up. The stakes were high. I'm getting yelled at. And the wide receiver coach at the time was, you know, he was a dude that would, you know, mother F you up and down the field if you weren't doing your job. So I'll never forget, we had a scrimmage and I touched the football like on a slant pattern, but a safety comes up and just blows my ribs up and the ball pops out and the referee called it a fumble. I'm like, zero chance that's a fumble. I didn't catch the ball. I literally, you know, just got blown up. But we don't fumble at the University of Utah, right? And so after, with like ribs that I thought were broken, we get done and the wide receiver coach is like, come with me, we don't fumble. And so from the end zone, every 5 yards, I was carrying two footballs in my hands and I had to do up downs on every 5 yard line. Meanwhile, he's slapping the footballs out of my hands. It's August. So on that turf with the little rubber things, you felt them. It was probably 110 degrees on the turf. And so my elbows are just split wide open, blood dripping down into the footballs and sweat dripping off my face. And the wide receiver coach is just like, you'll never play here. You're not tough enough to play here. You're wasting my time like every 5 yards, right? And so I get like 50 yards. And every time he knocked a football out of my hands, I had to go back 15 yards. So this thing like took like probably a half hour. I finally get done. And at this point I'm like, I hate this guy. Like, I hate this team. I'm done, right? So I get done. Coach is like, gives me a fist bump, runs off. Like, that was just normal, right? And I had this childhood where I like to say, like, it was pretty easy. Like, we were middle class. I had everything that I needed. Like, I got coached hard, but never that hard. So I was like a boy, right? And that was the first hard thing that like really, really happened to me, where other kids can come into that situation. That could be easy. Mm-hmm. Like, you think that's hard? Like, coming from certain neighborhoods, like, that's easy, right? For me, that was hard. And so I remember sitting there with like tears streaming down my face. And in my mind, I quit. I'm like, F this. My house is 20 minutes away. I'm pretty smart. I'll get a job and just be a normal person. All good. So that was that. Then to be initiated by the seniors, if you were at dinner and they had a glass and they like tapped it, you had to get up on the table and sing in front of like the whole cafeteria. And so I had this fear of public speaking anyways, right? And now I'm new. So I have ribs broken, that happened. Then this dinner happens and they're like, John Madsen. I get up there, I can't even remember my name basically because I'm like so stage fright. And they're like booing me and laughing and like, it's just like humiliating, right? And if they don't like your song, they went in and like shaved people's heads and eyebrows and all types of stuff. So I had like this, my mom was a hairdresser. And so I had like these blonde bleach tips, you know, in my hair. I liked my hair a lot. And the seniors came in the next day. Yeah. And they had their shavers and they just like held me down, shaved my head. And I like have my like hair in my hands, right? Oh my God. So that was like, I packed up my bags and I'm like, this is my last practice. Like, that's it. And so I went out to practice just kind of like going through the motions. And I told all of my little friends that I'm like, this is the last time you'll see me. Like, I'm out. And they're like, you're not going to quit. I'm like, believe it. I quit already in my mind. And so from just this random, you know, your dad was a head coach. And so he was supposed to hold this last team meeting, you know, before we were let go back to our dorms, right? And so he walks by me and I'm just like, this is the last team meeting, like in my head. And he looks at me, he's like, are you all right? And I said, yeah, coach, I'm fine. And he said, he looked at one of the other assistants and said, take this meeting. I'm going to go talk to John. And so he walks up there and he's like, what's going on? And I said, I just have tears streaming. And I'm like, coach, thanks for the opportunity, but I don't love football anymore. And I just want to thank you for giving me a shot. And he looked at me and he said, if you walk out that door right now, I will effing fight you. Sit down. And I'm just like, when you're in that state, you just like take a command, right? And so I sit down and he, you know, he proceeds to flip a picture around of you and his family at the time. And he said, John, this is, you know, this might seem hard for you right now, but I promise you in life, it's not hard. If I let you quit, then you're a quitter, right? And it's going to be easy to quit a second time and a third time. And someday you're going to have a family of your own and you're going to want to quit then. I will not let you quit. And you have an immense amount of talent and you can play football for as long as you want. And then he dials my dad and my dad's like, hello? And well, Urban's like, what's your dad's phone number? And I just rattle it off, right? So he calls him on the spot and he said, my dad's like, hello? He's like, hey, this John? My dad's name is John too. He said, yes. He's like, this is Coach Urban Meyer from the University of Utah. And I could like kind of see my dad's shock, right? Or not see it, but kind of hear it through the phone. And your dad's like, I got John in here. He's having a phenomenal training camp. I'm telling you, he's going to play a lot for this university. And I'm just like, I'm trying to quit right now, you know? And so he gets me on the phone with my dad, have a short conversation, hang up. Your dad looks at me and says, I'll see you at practice tomorrow. And I'm like, okay. And I just like went back to the dorms and all my friends are like, I thought you were quitting, right? You told us you were quitting. My bags were in the car. Like, I was done. So I never quit. Yeah.
It's like you didn't even have the option though. But what was going through your mind when you left that conversation?
For the next 2 weeks, I still wanted to quit, right? Like I almost had this feeling. I don't know if athletes feel this or not, but every time I was going to practice, I was so tired. I was getting my butt kicked. The coaches had this expectation. And I was almost like choking back this like feeling like I just wanted to cry or tear or just like run away, right? I'm like, what did I get myself into? And so I struggled pretty mightily for the next 2 weeks. The very first game we played was a home game against Utah State, which is not a great team. And we ended up blowing them out. So I got in the fourth quarter, right? Which all my family was there. They were tailgating. They were like, this is amazing. You don't play high school football and you're in playing in front of 50,000 people. And so at the end of the game, my dad's like, how did that feel? He's pumped up. I'm like, it sucked. He's like, what do you mean it sucked? I'm like, it's just garbage minutes. Like we were blowing them out by 40. Like that doesn't mean anything to me. I'm like, you don't even know what I've been through this past month. Right. And so he's like, well, what are you going to do? And I'm like, we play Texas A&M next week. I want to know what it feels like to play in front of 100,000 people. If it feels like that, I'm not playing football anymore. And he said, okay. You know, he didn't know what else to say. Like he's already like, you know, your dad doesn't want to see you quit. But I go to Texas A&M and this story is cool. And then get into whatever else you want. But this is like has a big point for everybody listening. So I get to Texas A&M and it's like a different, you've seen like SEC football and stuff. Utah football is kind of big. They're in the Pac-12 now, but this was the first like big time football that I saw. We're driving in and there's tailgate for miles, right? I get to the stadium and it's a Saturday in Texas and there's a band and there's a cheerleaders and there's 90,000 people. And I'm just like warming up and I'm like, holy crap. Like I'll do that training camp all over again. Like, this is awesome, right? I didn't even get in the game. I didn't even expect to play that week. I'm just there like thinking I'll get garbage minutes if we get blown out or if we blow somebody out. Very second quarter, like first minute in, one of our stars gets hit, knocked out of the game. We had a suspension earlier, so we were already shorthanded at wide receiver. I'm standing on the sidelines and they're screaming my name to go in. And so I just strap my helmet up and run in there. And I'm just like in the huddle, you can't hear a single thing. And I'm just like scared, super scared, right? But it's happening so fast and we're getting blown out. It's literally like 28-0. I go into the locker room down 28-0 and your dad comes beeline in, right? And he looks straight at me and I'm just like sweat dripping. Like, what just happened? Like, I can't believe I'm out there. I can't believe we're getting our butt kicked like this. And I ran like the wrong play. I didn't do anything terrible like fumble, but I definitely was out there scared. And so your dad just like straight at me and he has everybody around and he's screaming at the top of his lungs. He's like, John, I don't give an F if you're scared or not scared. There's 100,000 people out there that don't give an F, right? And it's just like, it's coming down now, right? He's like, more importantly, there's 50 guys in this room that have bled, that have sweat, that have been here together, that aren't going to let you bring us down because you're afraid. He's like, if I had one other person to put in this game right now, I would put him in, but all I have is you. And I was like, that was mic drop, right? And I was like, I don't want to go back out there. My buddy right next to me, like pats my leg and says, John, he's like, it's all good, buddy. And I'm like, no, it's not. Right. I go into the training room and I try to find Steve Savoy who got hurt. And I'm like, Steve, are you okay, dude? And he's like, no, man, my ribs are broken. And in that moment, I'm like just praying that like he would be okay. And then my nightmare would be over. Right. It was like dream turned nightmare. Your dad was right. There was nobody else to put in there. So we go back out the second half and we make this incredible comeback. The first time I felt like I finally settled down, it was 4th and 15 in like the fourth quarter. We had to make this or we didn't have a chance to win. And I jump up over the guy, catch a ball like for a 30-yard gain and get a first down. And it was like everything in that moment, I could just be an athlete again, right? I forgot about everything. And then with 8 seconds to go, we're down by 8 points. And we have one or two plays left to tie the game. Quarterback rolls out. we're on our own 40, throws a 60-yard pass. I catch it in the end zone with 0 seconds left. And the whole stadium just goes dead silent. So it's 28-26. We have one play left. Quarterback rolls out, tries to dive in an inch away. We don't score. So we lose the game by two. The backup quarterback is Alex Smith, for all you football fans. So the starting quarterback goes down, breaks his wrist. Alex Smith comes in the very next game, and we beat Oregon. We beat Cal. They're both nationally ranked, and Utah starts to be on the map. But that was my very real first college experience. Literally, that was 2003 when cell phone, like I had a cell phone, but it wasn't like iPhones and text messages. Like texts would come through. You're way too young to know this. And it would be like, what is this? Like, these are words on a phone, right? And I get to my phone and I had like 100 messages because everybody back home was watching me and they're like, how are you playing football? You never played in high school. And it was on TV, right? And so that was it, right? That was my 3 feet from gold moment. I could have quit 2 weeks before. In fact, I did quit in my mind, but I had this mentor figure that was like, saw something inside of me that I didn't yet see in myself. And it changed the whole trajectory of my life in an instant. So like, as I'm talking to you, like if that doesn't happen and I'm allowed to quit on my dream, then who knows where I'd be.
Wow. Yeah. Those are a couple of really powerful stories that I love hearing you talk about. And I think that sets up the perfect just example of what we're going to talk about, how dad's approach is like, he makes things really hard, right? Like really, really hard, training camp and all of that. So his approach is hard, overcoming hard things. But first, before we dive into all of that too, like, let's talk about what you're doing now. You just rebranded to a new awesome company called Superhuman, where it used to be Athletic AF. Just tell us a little bit about what you're doing now with all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, after the NFL was over, I was 27 years old. I had this love for fitness because think back to my story. I get embarrassed in the weight room. My whole life then is like, I love the weight room because I wanted to get stronger and bigger. So when I got cut, I went back to Salt Lake City. I opened up a gym to help high school athletes. That turned into a bigger thing. I started training NFL combine guys and had a really solid training performance gym in Salt Lake City. Problem with that is I was training people from 5 a.m., wouldn't get home till 9. I had a daughter 3 years ago, and I also started to love business. And so in the beginning, I was just like in love with being really great at what I was doing. And then I was like, you know, I want to be able to feed my family better. I want freedom. I want to be able to travel. I want to build an epic business and impact people. So about 3 years ago, I made a commitment to take my business, which was an in-person business, to a completely online business where we would train people all over North America remotely and dial in their nutrition plans and dial in their training and create a movement of people who wanted to win and create championship mentality and habits. And so that's what I've been doing for the past 3 years. It's really taken off, you know, probably in the last 18 months where there's been this massive ascension in my life and in my business. So super passionate about it. It's a mission-driven project and also a project that allows me a lot of financial freedom, which I'm also interested in building businesses.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And I watched you through that ascension. It's been really fun to see. But let's talk about the very first time. I've known you since I was 10, but let's talk about the very first time like you and I had a legit conversation. Do you remember when my dad was with you in Salt Lake and he knew I was interested in this fitness stuff? I was a health coach at the time, but I wanted to like train people in person in fitness. And so he put me on the phone with you, right? And I remember just telling you a little bit about what I was interested in doing. And you told me about the online game. And I was like, no, I don't want to do online. I want to do like the in-person, like, this is what I want. I want to make this much. And you're like, what are you talking about? Like, no, you don't want to do that. So long story short, like John essentially saved me from like that in-person training routine, which I did for a little bit, but quickly realized like, that's not what I wanted to do. And I didn't know, I had no idea that to this day I'd be a CEO running an online business with a really amazing team. And just so you guys know, like, John has helped me. He helped me build that from the ground up. And so for the past 2 years that I've really known you, I've learned like an insane amount from you. And so having you on this podcast today, there's like a million things I could have talked about. But I do want to, keep it pretty on track to one thing that I have you on for that mainly I want to learn more about today. So like today in this podcast, like I want to be a student to learn more about this because I feel like it's a different realm of work and productivity that you have than I've known my whole life, from how I was raised, from my dad, from my family. And so, and a big reason why, like I said, is because my dad, he operates in this way that I know so well. And obviously it's not in the wrong way. He's doing fine. He's doing great, but he's known for grinding, like the grind, you know, working hard, working long hours, always working, just working your tail off. And he's the best dad ever, of course. Like he's awesome, but he wasn't around much growing up because he worked a ton, but that's what his belief was. That's what he felt like he needed to do to make things happen. And like I said, it's not, I don't think the wrong way, and he's gotten much better at it, but it's led to some health issues for him, like stress and stuff like that. And because of him, we've lived an incredible life. But I feel like that's a standard of being a football coach too, right? It's like you work ridiculous hours, but it's a grind. That word grind, we talk about all the time. And so that's what I've learned is if I want to be successful, I got to grind. I have to make sacrifices in some areas of my life, probably won't be balanced because of that grind, but that's what it's going to take. But from what I learned from you recently that I want to learn more about, I thought was really interesting that maybe sometimes I add to the grind, like unnecessarily, like I make it a grind when it doesn't have to be just because I feel like I have to, like it adds to my story that I have to overcome something hard to have a story.
I think there's a lesson in there real quick. To
yeah, go for it. Listen.
When you talk to me, your dad's like, I was one of the two people he called. It's like, hey, John, I'm coming into Utah. Do you want to pick me up? I'm like, absolutely. Yeah. Because I've kept a relationship with your dad over the years. And so I was super pumped. And then he was asking me what I did. And it's really hard to explain, right? Like if a person asks you what you do, you like in this online weird world to people, it's hard to explain to like your dad's like, what do you mean you train people on the internet? Right? Like, is there any money in that? And I'm like, yeah, actually there is. And I'm doing really well. He's like, you got to talk to Gigi. And so we like just FaceTimed or dialed you right there. And I'm like, yeah, let's set up a time. But one of the most important things for you guys to understand listening is the fastest way from point A to point B is in a straight line, right? Mm-hmm. You wanted to do something. And I was like, look, I just spent 10 years going down that road. Let me just shorten it for you, right? Same thing with what we do for fitness. The people I work with have been trying to do fitness for 10 years mm-hmm. and they never quite look and feel the way they want to look. And it's not for lack of effort. They're putting a lot of times more effort into it than me. They're trying this diet. They're trying this cleanse. They're doing 7 days of workout, cardio, 2 days. And I'm like, look, if we focus on the right things, we'll get the result a lot faster and it won't feel like a grind. So that's where we're going to lead into this conversation. But right. That's important for business too. I just put you on a straight line to create a business as fast as possible without you trying to figure out everything on your own. That's what most people do. There's an easier way.
Right. Yeah. And so what you said on Instagram was, yeah, as quote you, as you ascend, you'll realize that most just distract themselves and never move the needle. Few do that work that actually gets the result. And then you said, doing unnecessary work is hard. Doing the right work often feels incredibly easy. Hard does not equate effective or necessary. So you started talking about a little bit about fitness, like many people make fitness hard, but it's very easy. And yeah, so that clicked in my head that I was like, that's so true. I feel like oftentimes I find myself staying busy. And as long as I'm staying busy, then I'm being productive when it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. So it's almost like this work smarter, not harder type approach. Whereas like my approach has always been just work hard, work hard, work hard, work hard, and you'll be successful. So would you say up to a certain point that that's kind of how you operated? And then maybe there was like a flip of the switch where you realized this and you were able to make that adjustment.
Yeah, I think I think what's missing for most people is context. In this age of YouTube clips and fast videos or podcasts or opinions or books, right? We lack context into our own situation, meaning football is a great sport that you can take analogy and metaphor for business, but it's also football versus business, right? So to bring up the point where your dad was like, yeah, he coached hard. It was a grind. Think about how you have to win championships though. You have to build culture, right? So you can't go in there and just everything be like, I'm your best friend and you know, it's all good, but then you get your butt kicked on by Alabama, right? So it's like in football, there's things that has to be done, which might contradict things that might have to be done in your business. And so it's hard because then, you know, people write books on the greatest athletes in the world and their, you know, their relentless ability to be the greatest in the world. You have a weird situation where you have a dad that could arguably be one of the best in the world that's ever done what he's done, right? I'm sitting here right now. I don't necessarily need to be Michael Jordan, right? Because to be the best in the world, you probably do have to sacrifice a lot of stuff. There, like that's like, if you've ever watched The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, he carried around a chip on his shoulder that was so big that's somewhat inspiring to people like us who watch. But then it's like, at what cost, right? Like there's no peace. And I'm like, you could be Michael Jordan or you could have a little bit more peace. We're all gonna die someday. We're all gonna go to the grave. And I'm very acutely aware of like, what is it that, how do I wanna live? Do I wanna be stressed? Do I wanna be in this pressure bubble? Is that worth it? Is, and to me, like, I know my answer. So I think that, you know, taking context out of books or podcasts or even me speaking and trying to apply it into whatever you're trying to do is very important. But I also know that for the last, you know, when I had that personal gym, I was grinding. Mm-hmm. I was grinding. And now I can make more money in a month than I was making in 3 years, right? And so now I can go play golf and have my business run and make money. And it feels like there's this effortless flow of stuff where before I was grinding. And so I'll just kind of go into it a little bit deeper from an unconscious like perspective. Everything that we love in our lives, right, that we're attracted to has to do with this idea that we're a hero in our own story, right? So all good movies, all good books, all good sports stories all have a common theme. And the common theme is the hero's journey, which Joseph Campbell wrote about, right? And so there's always this call to adventure. There's always this refusal of the adventure, right? So it's a cycle. If you haven't read it, like read it, because that allows you to write better stories and tell them better, to inspire people. I had this call to adventure to play football, although I never played before. And then I had the refusal of the call when I walked into your dad's office and I wanted to quit, right? And then I accepted it and I had this career, but then at the very moment I broke my leg and took myself out of the NFL draft. And so if I crafted a story around it, it's like, oh man, that's inspiring. Or like Rocky in the Rocky movies. It's like you're rooting for the underdog. And so in the Disney movies, right? There's always conflict. There's always this like the hero has to like battle. And then the princess comes out and, you know, Elsa wins. Right, I watch Disney movies with my daughter all the time. So everything, all of our beliefs and our values, a lot of them are built from the time we're 0 years old to seven. And so that hero's journey is almost like inserted in us. We want to be the hero in our story, right? And so if we're always the favorite in our unconscious mind, it's like, who's gonna like us if all we do is win, right? And so what people do is a lot of times, they'll place unnecessary adversity into their lives and they'll call it a coincidence, but it's not a coincidence, just to give themselves an obstacle that they have to battle so that if they battle it, they have a story to tell and more people will relate to them and they'll be way more liked. And so I had to uncover this in my own story and really explore whether I wanted to continue to live a life of adversity or if I just wanted to feel a lot more flow and effortlessness. And I'm really passionate about talking about that with people, because also what happens is if I started to succeed wildly in business or more than I thought that I could. And it was easy. What people do is they place more on their plate so that they can feel like they deserve it, because they feel undeserving of the success unless they grind out. And so I've been like, you know what? It's cool if I'm playing golf or fishing, or, you know, my company made like six sales yesterday in a row, where I was taking 2 hours of body work going like, the six different modalities of recovery. And I come out and my phone's like, we had a phenomenal day. And I'm like, why not make it feel easy? Right? There's a million things that I could do. I'm like, I could put on my plate, but I just don't anymore.
Wow. So you can choose between being in flow or adding adversity just because it makes you feel like you're worthy of becoming successful. So that's what you're saying.
Yeah. Your unconscious mind is a supercomputer, literally taking in a million times a million bits of information a second. Mm-hmm. Right. So literally at an unconscious level, if you feel like you need to deserve something to have it, then your unconscious mind will place you in scenarios for you to see the struggle, to have to overcome it so that you feel deserving of it. Because some people don't feel deserving of success unless they've had to do some crazy amount of work or put some crazy amount of time into it, because of all the things we've been told. Nothing ever good comes if it's easy. If it were easy, everybody would do it. Those are beliefs and suggestions that we can choose to program inside of us, or we can reject. So I literally walk around in my life right now as a person who understands linguistics and programming, right? With like an invisible bubble around me. Someone says something like that, I reject it. I'm like, you can be programmed like that. I choose not to. I'm going to win, or I'm going to win bigger. I deserve it just because I was born, because we all deserve it.
Wow. See,
it's much different.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a belief that you can choose to accept or not. And that's what you said in this conversation. You said a person can accept this belief or oppose it. And actually this is the crazy part about it. And you said they'll spend their lives and time proving themselves right. So yeah. Whatever you believe to be true, you allow to be believed to be true, you're going to spend your life proving yourself right. So you will have hard things happen in your life. So for example, when you were about to, you broke your leg, right? Before the draft. I feel like that's a great example you and I were kind of talking about earlier. And I asked you this question. Do you think it could have been prevented?
Yeah. So, you know, this goes down a really deep rabbit hole. Like some people aren't willing to like go down. Right. And so I'm careful here because I don't want people to go around thinking like every single thing in your life is 100% your fault. You created it, blah, blah, blah. However, if I go down this rabbit hole, I believe that when a person has tremendous amount of pressure being put on them, or, you know, whether that's internal pressure or external pressure, everything is energy. That pressure has to escape somehow. And so your unconscious mind, being a quantum supercomputer, will create scenarios to give you an out, to protect the ego, right? Because if the pressure is too much and it builds too much, and this is where you asked me a question, and then ironically, you know, we had this incident in the Olympics that happened 2 days later, where it's like, this is kind of the same thing, right? Where I basically took our conversation, took it to Instagram and said, hey, has anyone ever gotten sick, gotten injured, or had a bunch of chaos happen in their lives right before they were about to do something they were excited about, or that was really big event? And literally like 90% of the survey said, yeah, absolutely. And so what I'm saying is a lot of times that unconscious mind will bring stuff up and put that adversity into our lives because it gives us an excuse to protect ourselves from the possibility of not living up to our identity or being faced with the fact that we might fail. And so I think it can be prevented. A lot of things can be prevented, maybe not every single thing. I'm not going to say that right now, but a lot of things could be prevented if you do that work and try to analyze where those fears come from and understand how powerful the unconscious mind is, so that you don't need to place unnecessary adversity into your life. And so just real quick to like drive this point home, you've heard this story, Gigi, but it's super important for people to understand where this is coming from. And it might not seem like it's related, but I'll relate it back. There was a study done with two groups of people, a self-identified lucky group or an unlucky group, right? The unlucky group was like, look, everything bad happens to me all the time. Like nothing good happens to me. And then the lucky group would say, if $1,000 fell from the sky, it would fall right into my lap. Like I always win. If there's a competition, I win. And they wanted to see, because it's believed that we see with our eyes, right? You would agree. And everybody listening right now is like, yeah, dude, like I see with my eyes, right? But here's where it gets weird. They wanted to know if they placed a $20 bill in plain sight and staged a restaurant and had everybody, you know, these two different groups one at a time walk through as if they were ordering food, who would see the $20 bill when it was laying in plain sight? And over 90% of the people who grabbed the $20 bills, like, oh, awesome, $20 bills on the ground. They were the people who identified as lucky. They believed themselves to be lucky, right? The people who couldn't find it, or it wasn't even like it was hidden, the unlucky group only found the $20 bill like 5 or 10% of the time. And so they're like, are we seeing with our eyes, right? Like our eye, like everybody technically should be able to see that. Mm-hmm. However, our unconscious mind is keeping everything in the background running. It's keeping us alive. Our heart rate, our blood pressure, whether we're blinking right now or not blinking, all the stuff that if you're driving, listening to this podcast, all the stuff that's not important is kept down in the unconscious and isn't brought to your conscious level of thought because it's too much stuff, right? Like you would be overwhelmed if you were paying attention to everything. So it deletes, generalizes, and distorts reality. So don't forget those things. Deletes, generalizes, and distorts your reality to fit your own beliefs. So when a person who doesn't believe they're lucky and nothing good happens to them, they're distorting reality to, like, their unconscious mind could see the $20 bill, but it doesn't allow them to bring it into their conscious awareness because it would go against what they fundamentally believe about themselves, which is so trippy, right? And it goes back to everything that we are talking about and doing is the fact that our reality is shaped by perception. And our unconscious mind is that powerful to bring up stuff that we focus on. So most people go through life and they're focused on what they don't want. So they always see problem. Very few people can train their unconscious mind in a way that they always see possibility. And so possibility and ideas and opportunity is like flooded to them. And and other people think that it's coincidence or it's like this synchronistic thing. And it's like, no. I believe that I deserve it. I believe that the right people are going to come into my life at the right time. I believe that, you know, Urban saved, you know, my life from going a million different ways and randomly hit me up and I call you on the phone and I said, Gigi, and now we're sitting here with you going to have an incredible business, right? Like people can say, oh, that's such a cool story. You can believe that. But I'm telling you that there's much more to that type of manifestation and attraction. And a lot of times we can't really see the dreams, right? But they're there. Mm. They're there, right? And so what I'm really saying is it's not you'll believe it when you see it. It's you'll see it when you believe it. And that right there is everything.
Right. Wow. That's awesome. So it's like people probably experience more adversity in their life because they're looking for it, essentially. And
hardship, yeah, I mean, think about it. Like they, you know, if everything they're consuming is negative news, social media, comparing themselves, all the beliefs when they grew up, if they grew up in like, you know, families that had certain beliefs and was just like, this is the way it is, right? They have these beliefs as adults that they don't even realize because again, it's unconscious and therefore it shapes their perception because they're deleting, distorting, and generalizing everything else to match their belief system, wow. Which is why you and I, what, you know, or anybody could argue about a topic that's going on in the world. And we literally see data in a way and we're like, how do you not see this?
Right.
And the other person's like, how do you not see this? Right. And it's like, okay, what's reality then? And so I had to understand that, because before I was like, oh, reality is reality. Someone's right, someone's wrong. Yet everyone's right to themselves. And that's not, that really can't be arguable, right?
Right.
Wow. So real quick. So basically I wanted to shape my reality in a way that makes it easy to flow and to reprogram my brain to be like, is it always a win, like a win-lose situation? Is it that I can't have everything all at the same time? Can I have everything at the same time? According to who? Where did this belief come from? Is it true? Is it not true to me? What do I want instead? Right? And so it's directing my focus like a laser beam to what I want. And I get what I want. I get what I want all the time.
That's awesome. That's, yeah, that's deep stuff. Cool. So let's really quickly go back to just the idea of productivity. So I've heard you talk about a couple of times, like the 80-20 rule in regards to this, like focusing on the 20% that's going to give you 80% of the results, right? I thought that concept was actually pretty amazing. So do you want to tap into that a little bit and what that is about?
Yeah. So the Pareto's principle is like a principle in economics. I should have learned it in my economics degree school, but I was more of a football player than a student. Degree? Yeah. I was more of a football player than a student back then. It was easier than business. So that's why I took that. But long story short, this 80-20 principle is applicable to multiple different things in the world, right? And then if you microwise, I don't even know that word. If you put that in a micro level to your own life, basically in my business, 20% of what I do is responsible for 80% of the results, right? Which means inversely, 80% of what I'm doing is only responsible for 20% of the result. And so I am always checking myself on where my focus is and what's going to move the needle the most. So in fitness, right, people can go, this is why people go to the gym for 10 years straight. They're consistently, you know, pretty active. They try to eat clean. And yet they're just like, why does that other person look so fit? And I'm just kind of like living in this mediocre world where they're not completely out of shape because they are putting in effort, but their return on that effort is exponentially lower than the return on my effort, right? I can go to the gym 3 to 4 times a week for an hour and focus entirely on what I'm eating that might take 10 more minutes of preparation than what they're doing, but I just know the actual principle and walk around in a body that looks and feels better than, you know, 98% of people, right? And so they can look at me and be like, dude, you don't even really sweat in the gym, or you don't even do cardio, or why don't you do any HIIT training? I'm like, because that's like this much of it. I'm like, can some of that stuff work if give me a little tiny bit extra? It could, but I'm not really in the school that cares that much right now, right? So it's focusing effort on all of the principles that are proven to yield the highest return on your investment in both time and in energy. Mm-hmm. So you can do that in fitness, and you can absolutely do that in business. Because again, we can make ourselves busy doing a bunch of different stuff. And then at the end of the day, if you really started looking at your business, you're like, I always do better when I do this thing and this thing and this thing. All the other stuff I'm going to outsource and not make myself busy with.
Yeah. So let's put it in terms of fitness for people who are listening. So a lot of times we see people coming into our programs, and one of the biggest areas that they're struggling with is nutrition, but their goal is weight loss. Their goal is fat loss. Their goal is to be a certain body fat percent. And so they're killing themselves in the gym, and they're saying, I haven't missed a workout. I've worked out 2 hours a day, da 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 da. But then they know nothing about the thing that is going to give them 80% of the results, which is their nutrition. So I feel like that aligns with what you're saying, right?
100%. And so, you know, it's funny because I used to go to this country club, and it's like people would work out, and then there was a bar that was attached to it, and then they'd go get a beer. And I'd be like, guys, like, you know how like moronic this is actually, right? And they're just like, oh, I need to wash it down with a beer. I just played 2 hours of tennis. I'm like, okay, like, I get it. Fine. But like, to even a lesser extent for people is they go to group training classes, or they go to do Orange Theory, and nothing against these companies. It's just like they're exercising, right? but they're not training. And so there's a difference there. You can exercise and sweat and think you're doing stuff, which is better than zero, but there's also very well methodical thought out training that, you know, whether you want to believe it or not, has scientific principle attached to it. And if you do the fundamentals, it's going to be way better for you. You'll build more muscle, right? And then you'll control fat loss through nutrition. The problem is we have a million Instagram models and we have information everywhere. And we have diet books that come out and say, you know what, just only eat, you know, during this time period and you'll lose weight. And then there's diet books that say, just cut out carbs and you'll lose weight. And there's like, hey, there's a documentary, cut out meat and you'll lose weight. And all of those things can work, but it's not the driver of fat loss. Mm-hmm. And so from a person who's super confused, and I don't expect people to know this because it's our industry, not theirs. Right? I'm like, I don't really care to know all the details about how to change my brakes. I'm just going to go pay someone to do it for me. Same thing with fitness. It's like, awesome. You know what? I'm going to teach you the real principle. So you can choose to be vegan. You can choose to be paleo. You can choose to be keto, or you can choose to intermittent fast. All good. As long as you understand proteins, carbs, and fats, and about how much your body specifically should consume, not how much your sister-in-law should consume, or your mom, or your brother, or your husband, how much you specifically should consume, and sometimes when. And that right there is everything. A person can come in and just get results seemingly overnight after struggling for 10 years. Mm. It's like hiring a business coach too, right? It's like, just cut out all the stuff that I don't need to focus on and tell me what to focus on. Mm. Seems like the fastest route to me.
Sure. Yeah. One of my favorite quotes that I think I've heard you say that totally aligns with this is, ooh, you're going to have to help me with it, but give me an axe and tell me to chop down a tree and I'll sharpen the axe for the first 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Abraham Lincoln says it. Yeah. I wish I said that, but it's perfect analogy.
Well, I knew someone else said it, but you've shared it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it because it's like, it's true. It's like, go out with a plan, right? Like, think this thing through, strategize, and then execute. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's all you got to do, and you can win. Mm-hmm. And so I think our job, your job, my job is to get the people who want to win and just make it easier for them, right? Because hard, this goes back to everything. Hard is to continue working out 7 days a week, to do 2-a-days, to have to do all this stuff and not ever get what they really want. I'm kind of opposite of people in the fitness industry, as I waste zero time convincing people that they should get healthy. It literally, like, if you're listening, I don't care if you're healthy or unhealthy. That's your choice, right? So all of my marketing is speaking to the person who's like, I want that. And I'm like, cool, we can be friends, right? I'm not trying to convince and be like telling them stats about obesity and this and that. I'm like, look, like, you guys all know, right? If you don't want it, I can't help you. If you want it, then I'm going to make it the fastest road you can possibly be on to go from A to B. And you're going to be pumped because you're going to be invested and you're going to know exactly what to do. Alternatively, look, you could go on Google and you could search a million articles on fat loss and you could get taken in every single direction. You could watch your favorite Instagram model do a bunch of weird workouts with bands. And, you know, who knows, 10 years from now, you might figure it out, or we can figure it out in 10 weeks. I don't care. Right. So you can either spend your money to save you time, or you can save your money and keep your time. Doesn't matter to me.
Wow. That is awesome.
Because look, and you get this, I advertise a lot on Facebook and Instagram. And so people's like all the time, they're like, guys, all you got to do is do this, or you can get this for free on the internet. I'm like, I never said you couldn't. Right. But I've spent the last decade of my life sifting through and being like very precise so that, again, we can focus on the stuff that's going to get the most return. And that's what you do for your clients so that you don't have to waste your time. I just hate wasting time.
Yeah, me too. I hate wasting time and energy.
Exactly. Nothing's worse than like doing something and not getting the result.
Right.
If I went to the gym and didn't get the result, like I wouldn't go.
Yeah. I feel like that's how I was doing fitness too, for most of my life up until I learned about all this stuff and understand actually how it works.
I tell my clients, I'm like, they're more relentless than me. Yeah. They keep showing up. Dude, that's going to be my next video. I'm like, you're more relentless than me. You keep showing up and getting punched in the face at the gym and coming back for more. Like if I went to the gym and didn't get a result, I'd stop going. It'd be super frustrating.
That's so true. That's awesome. Well, we're running short on time, John. I'm going to have you come back on because this is super awesome. Thank you so much for your time, for your gems. This is really cool. Any final thoughts or like anything that you wanted to share before we close out?
No, I just appreciate you having me on. Super, super cool connecting with you in this past 2 years has been really cool. Like in a way that is serendipitous. Your dad coaches hard. I'm like, when I say like, don't grind, like I'll coach people hard too, especially if there's like, you see something in somebody, right? So it's like your dad coaches hard because there's a reason for it. And so I've loved getting the opportunity to like watch you take this idea and turn it into a business. Because if you're listening, there's a million ideas. Most everyone has ideas, right? And so people will always say, oh, I have this idea to do something. And then they take those ideas to their grave, right? It's not the idea that's important. It's the person who executes their vision courageously, right? Everybody's waiting for this, like, I know it's going to work out moment, and nobody knows if it's going to work out, right? All you can do is take one step in front of the other and keep on moving and never quit. Maybe you pivot, but you never quit, and you just keep chasing down what you want your life to look like, and you end up there, right? You end up there with relentless focus. Most people are too afraid. So if you are listening, I think one of my favorite words for this year and every year is courage. Just have the courage to execute and believe in yourself, because faith is always first, right? It's not that you're just going to know and then you do it. The only difference between Gigi and me or some other people is we took this leap of faith and then we just keep going. So I think that's super important.
That's something that I learned from you that I didn't really embody initially at first, but was to have faith, make a decision, and just fix along the way, which is go, right? Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Thank you so much for being on here. Thank you for everything, guys. By the way, John's the reason why I have a podcast. It was like the last thing that I wanted to do, but here I am, thanks to John. So thank you for everything, John. Where can people find you? You know, social media, you have a podcast of your own too. And
yeah. Podcast, the searchability is super weird. So if you type in John Madsen, it should pop up, but Instagram has all the links. So John Madsen Official is probably the place.
Hey everybody. Thanks so much for listening. I just really appreciate that you are on here and hearing what I got to say. I hope you were able to learn and take something from it. And if you did, do me a favor, go and share this episode with somebody that you think will get a lot out of it. And also, I would just love to hear your thoughts. You know, reach out to me on Instagram, leave a rating or a review. It would be much, much, much appreciated. But thanks again so much for listening. And until next episode, go crush the week.